You're listening to the Zipline Logistics Truck Yeah podcast, where we explore all kinds of hot topics in the logistics industry. Get ready to learn, laugh, and get your freight on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Zipline Logistics podcast. My name is Jesse Jewett. Joined with me, as always, our Director of Training and Development, Teddy Lee Knox. Teddy, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jesse.
We're headed into 2025. We've got a special guest with us, our co-founder, President Andrew Lynch. Andrew, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. So exciting. I think once again, we should stop calling me a special guest.
You're just a guest.
Now.
Yeah, you are a recurring guest, recurring orders. That's my cloud function. Shout out to our TMS system. It's a great, efficient tool. We are looking for sponsors in 2025. So that's exciting. So dropping McLeod right off the bat, but no free ads. We are talking today about market predictions for 2025. We've had a couple of rough years in the past since the COVID pandemic ended in 2022. I mean, I don't know if it ever really officially ended, but someone higher than me up there said that it ended at some point. But we're going to talk about the economy and the general freight market, obviously CPG, consumer packaging goods, supply and demand, volumes, rejections, rates, et cetera, and our retail buyers' responses to those dynamics. Did I miss anything?
No, but I do have a question for you first before we get into this.
All right.
So thinking new year, new listeners.
Sure.
Why is this important? Why would anyone want to listen in to talk about the upcoming market?
It's a great question. They're planning their year, planning their budgets. I know, you know, fourth quarter, early Q1 is usually budget planning season. So they're just trying to get an understanding of what's it going to do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if we all had crystal balls and this was actually accurate, you know, I don't think we'd be podcasting about it. We'd probably be sitting on a beach somewhere sipping a pina colada.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe an Arizona iced tea. That's another product placement. We are looking for sponsors in 2025. But it's important to just understand the dynamics, right? Like, this is been a challenging, let's call it 5 years, quite frankly. I mean, heading into 2020, mm-hmm. I think Andrew would agree that pretty steady. It's a seasonal market swings, and then boom, the world changed, what felt like overnight, and then it kind of went crazy there for 2 years, and it changed again, what felt like overnight, and it's been this kind of a slow, steady decline. But let's just talk about it right away, Andrew. What are... We've called the last 2 years a freight recession, 2023, 2024. Are you seeing signs of positivity?
Yeah, I think so. And for, you know, I just before I even get into this, we need to do a podcast where we go back to the 2024 predictions podcast and see how long all of that was. I don't remember exactly what was in there, but I know I was wrong about a lot. I think going into the fourth quarter, we really started to see a little bit of what we would pick up as sort of signs of a more closer to heading towards balanced market than we have seen in 2 years. And, you know, for us, I think, you know, Jesse, you and Teddy know well that for us, you know, those early signs typically tend to show up as either service failures happening inside of our own walls, where we're having to rebuff freight that's, you know, maybe reflective of there being a little bit more dislocation, maybe a little bit more activity on the spot market, or service failures out of our competitors. And that usually shows up by, you know, us getting a, you know, kind of last minute, hey, can you come grab this for us? Or us taking over contract lanes where other folks, you know, are no longer really able to service or show up. And so we started seeing really, 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 you know, the tiniest, you know, green shoot you can imagine of those in the early fourth quarter this year.
Mm-hmm.
And as we start to head into, you know, the end of this year, I think that some of the statistical evidence that we look for has started to show up as well, right? I mean, people talk about tender rejections and, you know, the total accepted volume numbers and how those match up to exhibit, you know, a more balanced marketplace that we're starting to head into. So, you know, I think some of those statistical measures are starting to show the same things that our intuition was starting to make us feel, our spidey senses.
Sure.
In October and November. So it feels like that call that, you know, was made by FreightWaves that the recession is over, right? That recessions are technical terms, and calling something started or ended is a technical term. And by technical measures, I think they're right. By the impact that it has on our business, I don't think that they're even close. And I think there's, you know, quite a bit to go, quite a bit of pain left for us to all feel.
Yeah. Well, and I guess comparatively too, right? Like thinking of the last,
yeah,
that's right. What's trying to frame it. Like, I don't know if it's what the word is, the syndrome or something like that, but like having been in it for the last 4 years, expecting it to either rebound or bounce, you know, the same way that it did before, it's not going to happen, right?
No, yeah, absolutely not. And look, trucking companies are still going to keep on going out of business. And I have to say that, you know, I think the real pain for the next two quarters is in the brokerage business. Trucking companies, you know, their numbers are starting to improve. And they, you know, a lot of them will still go out of business because their finances are upside down.
Right.
They bought their trucks at the wrong time. They didn't refinance. Interest rates are high. Insurance is going up. All the reasons that put trucking companies out of business in every market. But, you know, brokers are going to start to have a very challenging time as the capacity market, you know, balances out with demand, or we start to see that supply diminish faster than demand starts to rebound. And so you've got this environment where rates are stagnant, which I personally think is probably the case for most of this year. I mean, you know, I think that there's going to be an upturn towards the back half, but I don't think it's going to be severe by any sense of the word. And so I think there's going to be a really difficult marketplace for brokers that are heavily exposed to high volume contract freight, where,
yeah,
you know, you've got to be able to buy really, really effectively. And, you know, I know one thing that I said in the last time we did a predictions podcast is that the economics for trucking companies have been so bad for so long that the idea of a relationship being capable of keeping your rates in place is complete fantasy. I mean,
right.
It's always been a little bit of a dicey conversation, right? Like, I mean, there's always been only like sort of a wink and a nod behind that conversation. And certainly, you know, when carriers have good partnerships and the economics are working for them, good carriers and good relationships are fantastic and reliable and long-term that you can build around. But when the economics are terrible, it doesn't matter if the relationship's good. They have no choice but to go chase money. They've got to go chase better revenues on a per mile basis for their fleets. And that's what we're going to start to see out there, is that, you know, this rotation of capacity towards higher paying freight is going to cause quite a bit of pain, I think, in the beginning of the year.
So that's a great point. So let's expand on that just for my clarification. So let's all the last 2 years, right? Or certainly the last 2023 and 2024, in my opinion, you talk about that relationship. So the rates keep coming down, and then we get into, say, these seasonal adjustments, right? Where Q4 2024, we're starting to see uptick. Rejections are happening. And so we're going to what we deem a relationship with a customer and saying, hey, like the dynamics have changed. Inbound location X is more difficult. The weather's bad. There's not as much freight coming out of there. So like the dynamics of our quote unquote locked in rate for the year has changed and we need to adjust. Unfortunately, those shippers are then saying like, well, there's 12 people behind you that are ready to take that over right now and are calling me every day at your price. And in some cases, probably lower, which is crazy.
Those are the guys, those 12 guys behind you in line with the same price, you know, willing to take that shot on the chin.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that are no longer going to be in our population at the end of 2025.
Right.
You know, that I think I've called that, you know, sort of that. I mean, I've referred to this a dozen different times, you know, talking about the fact that Uber Freight, I think in the Convoy podcast, we talked about the fact that all of this stuff is just a different iteration of the coyote model that turned so many, you know, people's economics upside down, which is this, you know, sort of hyperscaler type of, you know, growth strategy. You go out and get revenue and wallet share at any cost, you know, figure out how to service it, lose money if you have to. Well, that model's gone. The fiscal policy does not allow that to happen anymore.
Yeah.
And so those brokers that still operate that way, which, you know, you and I both know that there are still tons of them out there.
Yep.
Clinging to life and behaving very cavalierly. You know, those are going to be the folks that are no longer with us at the end of 2025. They're going to have a painful year.
I feel like a lot of what we say in this podcast and previous episodes, and a lot of the things I get through in onboarding and training, is all of these things are great. A plan is great. We mm-hmm. have a forecast, but it very rarely ever actually works out. One thing in this industry has taught me is expect the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go in thinking this is how it's going to work. Everything's great. My rates are set. Nothing's going to change. That is wrong. It will always change, whether, you know, especially with CPG, someone else is going to come out with a brand similar to yours, and the chance that they get it on the shelf first is a real possibility. So all of those things need to be taken into account. And again, we talk about it all the time. That partnership piece is really important. For Andrew, to your point, like, maybe you were wrong about the 2024 prediction, but having a plan allowed us to adjust quickly. And then also, like, without that partnership, who knows what's going to happen? You're not going to be able to keep with what your plan was initially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I do think that in that podcast, we talked about skidding along the bottom for a very long time. And, mm-hmm. and I don't know that by any, I'm not going to pretend to take a victory lap a la Craig Fuller on being, you know, a year early on a call. But I don't think I ever thought that a year would be how long we would, another year would be how long right. we would skid along the bottom. But I think what's important for everyone to understand, I mean, our shipper partners, I mean, look, when we're talking to our clients, the ones that are real partners who ask us for our input in their budgets for next year, we haven't been shy about saying, hey, I don't think that you need to worry about more than a couple hundred basis points of cost increase. And I don't think you have to worry about that until the back half of the year.
Right.
Now, you know, that's, to me, that's being one, that's being a real partner, right? Because I think that the zeitgeist or the conversation around the marketplace right now is that it's turning back up, right? And then it's going to go back to a highly constrained market, and carriers are back in the driver's seat, and you know, shippers are losing their power. Like, that's just not true.
Right.
And, you know, to the extent that I think a lot of our clients have called us almost in a little bit of having like almost like a panic attack. Like,
right.
I'm reading all this stuff about freight markets turning and, you know, what do we have to budget for next year? And, you know, give us a number. And I'm like, you should not be worrying about this. This is not, you know, this is not going to be a massive budget impact. I'm going to, you know, for safekeeping.
Yeah.
Put a couple hundred basis points of increase into your freight, into your logistics spend, but certainly not in the first quarter and probably not in the second.
Yeah, that's kind of the PTSD, or again, whatever syndrome you want to call it.
Yeah.
Having gone through it the last 4 years, it's like, well, is it going to switch again like 2020? I mean, no, it's not. It's going to be slow and steady, and it's going to, you know, we're going to communicate that, and we're going to probably over-communicate that. And yeah, there's going to be a handful of times throughout the year, most likely around those typical seasonal adjustments, the Southeast during quote unquote produce season, LA in June and fourth quarter, right? Like, it's going to go back to some of the waves that we saw previously that are quote unquote typical.
You're reminding me of conversations that actually Jesse, you and I probably had offline, but when there was earlier this year, when there was a lot of fear of recession, and the level of fear in the air around a recession was so strong, and what it brought me to, like, depression economically, to the way that like our grandparents behaved because they lived through the depression.
Yeah.
A lot of this workforce, the only recession that they've experienced is the Great Recession. And, you know, so their whole mindset around a recession is like, oh God, you know, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to have to move back in with my parents. It's devastating. And it's like, hey, no, you know, a recession is a technical term. It, you know, it means that the economy shrinks for, you know, at a certain level for two quarters consecutively.
Yeah.
Usually they don't last more than two quarters. Usually they don't, you know, lead to, you know, double digit unemployment rates, right? Like the history of recessions, they're short, they're, you know, moderately painful. And then, you know, you get back into growth mode afterward. But the perspective that everyone has is the Great Recession. I think to your point right now, you know, the Great Freight Recession, which is definitely the right term for it.
Yeah.
Has really impacted people's mindsets around how scary the future is. And everybody, if there are brokers and 3PLs listening to this, I think everybody would love the reality to be what the fear is, right? We would love to see the market pop, you know, and go back to explosive growth mode. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not in the cards.
It's a great call. Thanks for getting us back on the topic, 2025 predictions, freight market in particular. Let's talk about the CPG element of this. That's one of our specialties. 85% of our freight kind of rolls through those major retailers that we like to talk about. So some factors that may play a part in the CPG demand: the rise of private label brands and more competition, sustainability, and personalization of product. Those are on our show notes, Andrew. You can take it wherever you want. I think we've talked about, I know we've talked about on a previous podcast about the challenges that the CPG brands, particularly the startups, have experienced over these last couple of years, right? There's the money wasn't as free, I guess, for lack of a better term. So maybe that plays a factor in it too.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think this is a really great marketplace for consumer goods going into 2025. I think the dynamics they're not at all like they are in the freight marketplace. Consumer is super healthy, right? Despite all of the fear mongering, again, the economic fear mongering that kind of happens out there, the consumer is in not anywhere near as good a place as they were in during COVID, of course, because they got handed thousands of dollars and then they didn't have anywhere to spend it, but they're still in historically fantastic shape. And, you know, one thing that I think bodes really positively for Zipline specifically and for the way that consumer dynamics work out this year is that brick and mortar, traditional retail, you know, physical retail is doing really, really well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are obviously dark spots, right? I mean, you're seeing, you know, companies like Big Lots and dollar stores struggle, but the share of purchases that has taken place during the holiday season has been overweight on the brick and mortar side. I think that the last time I read something on this, it was that direct to consumer or e-commerce was down something like 4 or 5%, and that physical shopping was up like double digits, 11 or 12%. And you know, for us, that's a great thing, right? We want consumers doing their shopping physically in stores because we want brands to want their product to be physically on shelves.
Yeah,
right. So anything that helps to separate high quality logistics functions from low quality ones, and certainly an emphasis on traditional retail does that, is great for us because it's great for our customer. You know, our customers become category leaders because they outperform their competitors, not just on product quality, not just on marketing, but on execution. And we're a big part of that. And so, you know, that's a place where when I have optimistic moments after two straight years of darkness, where I see great opportunity for Zipline. And for consumer brands right now, you know, look, they've been in a dark place for a solid 2 years as well, for different reasons. It's not that there's not demand for their products. It's more that the economics of manufacturing and marketing and distributing just became very, very, very expensive for them. Especially, you know, the ability to raise money became super duper challenged.
Yeah.
Especially for young brands, a big focus on, you know, profitability in a different way than there was for the kind of the 10 years prior to late 2022. But where I think we are now is that, you know, the sort of the cream has risen, right? The unprofitable brands have, by and large, either figured it out, figured out how to become profitable, or have exited the marketplace.
Right.
And the brands that are coming to market are showing up at the right price with the right margin, with a, you know, a focus on delivering into, you know, traditional retail, that, you know, that play of being, you know, DTC only really has fizzled or even, you know, maybe extinguished altogether. So, you know, I think that there is going to be an interesting time for consumer goods. I don't know that there's been a better time to launch a consumer brand than right now, just because discretionary spending is healthy and there's been a lack of innovation, I think, for a couple of years, driven by just how difficult it was for, you know, kind of challenger and startup brands to come to scale.
Well, there's definitely some parallels between, you mentioned brands figuring it out. It's similar to the trucking companies, right? Like you have to figure out what your operating costs are when there's such a compression in the marketplace. But on another tangent, I'll let you address that. You can just nod in agreement and we'll just move on.
We're all nodding.
But yeah, I mean, it's wild, right? If you would think that if you entered into the trucking market in 2020 and early 2021, you thought that, man, we are going to ride this gravy train with biscuit wheels forever, baby. Mm-hmm. Like, this is awesome. And then, boom, April 22 happened. And like, wait, what's happening? How much does it cost to do this? Holy cow. The maintenance and all those fees are going up and my revenues are going down. Not great. But piggybacking off of your commentary about retailers on the shelf, personal story, took my daughter to the outdoor mall here in Columbus, Ohio. Easton, again, we're looking for sponsors in 2025. I think Easton has some sort of, you know, promotional gig. It was bustling. She's been to two malls in her entire life. And it obviously it's, you know, the holiday season, but I mean, it was packed to the gills. There is something about seeing, touching, feeling, and holding a product in your hand and figuring out if you want it, or does this feel how I, you know, is it going to be close? That's mostly like clothing and stuff like that, but toys, man, that doesn't look like I thought it was going to look dead, or man, we should buy these earrings for mom. Like, I mean, it's an experience. I certainly don't want to do that every weekend, but there is something to be said for that whole experience.
I'm jumping in here.
Yeah, now. I couldn't agree more.
So you were talking about the like holistic view of why these customers are successful. It's not just that their brand is good. It's getting the brand on the shelf and all this stuff on time. And I personally have seen this within Zipline in my time here of that private label switch.
Yeah.
These great brands becoming the private label. So that repack. When I hear private label, I automatically think repack facility. Like we're taking this, you know, great brand and then helping repack it. I know that's not always the case when it comes to private label. And I know some facilities call their private label, other ones call them by their name. So that does not, we're not just talking about Kroger here. But I think that seeing that and seeing it firsthand and having taken a part in that success to see where that goes, it's just proof how important it is to have the right communication, to have that on time, and putting all those things together is what makes the difference. It's not negotiating $50 down on this truck. It is making sure that you get things there on time, that you are there when people want to buy you, and then having, you know, your product integrity being exactly where it should be. That's what makes it more difficult for a competitor to come in and knock you off the shelf. And that's what will drive success of having your brand be repacked into some sort of private label for those big box retailers that we all go to.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, look, I think there's something cyclical to say about like sort of when does an advantageous strategy, especially on the retail and consumer space, when does that advantageous strategy become sort of like a gorilla that you're wrestling with? And private label is a good example now. I think Amazon for a long time was a good example where, you know, you saw this, you know, so many brands facilitated, they didn't have to deal with traditional retail because they had this, you know, fulfillment by Amazon, or they had Amazon as their marketplace. And, you know, sure enough, probably predictable to anybody, you know, taking a mile high view of it or looking at the history of all of these industries. Of course, Amazon stopped being so, you know, supplier friendly, right? Of course, Amazon became just another, you know, gorilla that was going to beat you down on margin and, you know, fine you all the way out the door until your product's no longer on the main, you know, on the first listing.
Right.
And of course, Amazon's going to replicate your product with private label and put it above yours. Like, of course that stuff's going to happen because that's what these guys do. I mean, that's the business that they're in. I'm not trying to say that Amazon's the devil. I'm simply saying that there's always a new devil, and it's
right.
It, you know, the time that people are celebrating that strategy or even profiting from that strategy, that is the creation of the devil, right? That is what's creating that gorilla. We're feeding this thing, right? So when it comes to private label, you know, sure. Yeah. It's great that a brand can repack their high quality product, you know, mark it down by 30 cents a unit and sell it as an Aldi brand. And that, you know, that allows them, you know, some different economies of scale. But, you know, you could be pretty sure that 30 cent discount is going to become a 55 cent discount when they figure out what your economies of scale are and they start to take that for themselves.
Yeah.
And again, that's not an indictment on Aldi. That is just kind of what this business is.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a really, really long-winded way of sort of trying to reverberate Teddy's point, which is these little, you know, end-arounds that you find towards, you know, making, you know, profits that somebody else isn't making or hitting a market that somebody else isn't hitting, those things are temporary and they're great. They can be catalysts for growth and catalysts for brand awareness, but there is nothing more foundational and long-term and critically healthy than just absolutely airtight execution. And, you know, great logistics partners, whether they're Zipline or other. I know there are other folks out there that do a great job, of course. You know, that's really kind of the front line for these consumer brands. And, you know, boy, it's an awful lot of work and an awful lot of time that can be taken off the plate of, you know, brands that, you know, really probably want to be marketing and sales and product and, you know, really kind of handed back to them as, you know, insight and data and optimization.
That goes directly into the buyer's relationship, I think. So I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
No, that's where I was going to pivot to.
But so if you
nailed it.
If you don't have everything you're saying, Andrew, whether your product is the best product in the world or not, if the buyers don't like you and you can't deliver on what you said you would do, they're not going to keep buying your product. You're going to have inconsistent cadences. You're going to see issues with inventory. You're going to see issues with picking things up on time. And your product's not going to sell. You've seen it in many of our blog posts, involuntary sampling. That's a really big problem that people don't anticipate and maybe don't pay attention to.
You're 100% right to bring it up. One, I'm surprised that rant I just went on led anywhere. So good job doing that. Two, yeah, I mean, look, we've seen it even this year, right? Where logistics is not transportation is not the problem this year, right? Like if your brand is struggling with transportation, then you are doing it so wrong, right? Because it's just, trucks are everywhere. I mean, there are far too many trucks on the road and, or available. And it's, you know, it's what's precipitating this recession, but we've still seen brands, you know, get their shot at Costco, get their shot at, you know, a region for Walmart or a region for, you know, UNFI to be distributed into the specialty marketplace. And they can't execute. And so they get dropped. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen folks fail at this and it really is devastating to a brand. You know, the amount of effort that goes into fulfilling, you know, a first regional crack at a Costco deployment is enormous, massive resource sink. And to have all of that resource poured in and then to fail for one reason or another, you know, whether it's because your 3PL, you know, couldn't get their stuff together or wasn't cooperative with you, or it's because, you know, your ingredients or your packaging didn't show up in the right place at the right time. Those failures, you know, in a challenging marketplace are the difference between, you know, life and death. And, you know, I think, though, to your point on buyers, we have this conversation so often about, and this is related to buyers, but it's you know, about fines and fees, right? And people demonize these retailers for having these programs that, you know, they feel like are punitive, or they feel like it's, you know, it's a little opaque. And look, they're not wrong. I mean, the UNFI and the KHE, those fee rules are super opaque and very, very difficult to manage. But by and large, you know, what these guys are trying to solve is the fact that product isn't showing up on their shelves. And right. retail is an extremely competitive marketplace, and they're competing for foot traffic. You know, they want boots stomping around their aisles, and they want exciting brands to draw consumers in. But if those exciting brands aren't on the shelf, then, you know, those consumers are going to go elsewhere. And so, you know, they put these policies in place so that they can run a reliable business with inventory that they can predict and market around. And so, you know, for buyers, you know, the story remains the same. I think for brands, the excuses are gone, especially in this market. You just, if product is not on shelf, it is because you have a bad operation or a poorly thought out product.
Or just the wrong partner.
Yeah, but good God. I mean, look, this has been our struggle. I mean, you guys have lived it, right? This year, it's been difficult at Zipline, just like it's been difficult everywhere else, is because, you know, specialization gets watered down when everyone is willing to, you know, take 10 extra steps to secure a shipment or to get something moved. And every carrier is willing to, you know, respond to texts at 2 o'clock in the morning in order to make sure that they get that next load, that they don't get bounced out of your network. You know, when everybody's this desperate, they're willing to do an awful lot of things that in a normal marketplace they wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the risk to shippers next year isn't price, it's service. That's what we're going to see. That's where Zipline is going to win. That's where we're going to capture new business from new clients. We're going to continue to retain our loyal clients who we thank and adore for, you know, being transparent and staying with us throughout this time when we know they've gotten 150 phone calls a day. Next year, it's not going to be about, you know, people's budgets getting blown out. It's going to be about this service element. It's going to be about OTIF and, you know, RDD performance and MABD performance. A lot of folks have themselves contracted into rates or contracted into volume shippers that they're going to have to point resources towards if they want to hang on to those volume shippers. A lot of folks are going to have a more difficult time moving their freight because they've been beating the crap out of carriers and taking every little penny they can, and then, you know, allowing themselves to get commoditized by their shipping partners. And those folks are going to have to pour resources into booking and rebooking and rebooking bad freight at bad rates. I'm sure they'll find trucks.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be on time. It's not going to be quality. You're going to see a massive slide on the service side for shippers this year. And, you know, again, for us, that's good news. You know, we're here to be a service player. We struggle in markets like the one that we are in because we do not commoditize ourselves. I think that what we're going to be here for, you know, starting hopefully in the early second quarter, I think there's a strong possibility we start seeing service decline a little earlier than that, is a great opportunity for us to bring on new partners.
Yeah.
And be mindful of where we're applying our resources.
So everyone, give us a call mid-January once you get all your vendor chargebacks, your facility chargebacks on your late fees, and we can help you correct that bad habit.
Nailed it. Yeah, absolutely. Give us a call. Well, I think that's a good spot to kind of wrap it up. So freight recession, there are signs that things are improving. We're excited about those signs. Generally speaking, we're going to continue to monitor things. But like Andrew mentioned, it's going to be slow and steady. Particularly, we're going to see a little bit of a bump in the second half. For our CPG brands out there, getting your product on the shelf is certainly first and foremost the number one priority, right? On time, in full, hitting all those metrics. We've seen some rejections in rates and volumes, like we said, spike a little bit. There's obviously some uncertainty around tariffs and maybe things of that nature. So we're going to, again, continue to monitor that and keep people informed. But reminder, these are only predictions. Anything can happen in 2025. Who knows what is in store for us, truly. Did I miss anything that you really want to highlight, Andrew?
No, don't listen to our 2024 predictions.
That's a great call to go back, and maybe we'll do a quick quick hitter, because I think this one's longer than the 2024 predicting.
Yeah, I want to get on here and beat ourselves up. I think we should go prediction by prediction and just, you know, let's get some self-deprecation.
Yeah, get there early January when things are dark in Columbus. Let's really get on the horn and go through some tough predictions from a year prior.
Stay tuned. Show notes are being created right now.
Yeah. As always, folks, as Teddy mentioned, give us a call, 888-GO-ZIPLINE. Visit us at www.ziplinelogistics.com. Leave us a 5-star review. Andrew Lynch, our fearless leader, president, thank you for joining us again. We will see you next time.